You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Stupid Cupid, you're a real mean guy.
Hey KBOO listeners, join us at the station on February 7th from 6 to 10 p.m. for our Stupid KBOOFID First Friday Arts Walk. Enjoy art, listen to music, savor drinks, get your face painted, and pick up a Valentine's gift from one of our amazing vendors. There's something for everyone. We can't wait to see you.
Two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
David D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. There's been a firestorm around the notion of diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, which at this point has been a code word for anti-blackness. There's been a firestorm around people who are woke, and woke coming out of the black community really meant being socially aware, being conscious, being politically astute. Things that we had long complained about in terms of people not having political awareness. Like, you all need to get some political awareness. Well, they don't teach civic in school, but people took it upon themselves to learn, and they were very proud. Like, I'm woke to the system. But now that's become a pejorative word, to the point that you have anti-black policies, naming themselves as anti-wokeness. We wanted to talk to somebody who's been fighting this tooth and nail from two very different angles, but they overlap, and she is definitely a freedom fighter. Her name is Dr. Akilah Cadet. She is the founder and CEO of Change Cadet, an organizational development consulting firm that focuses on embedding belonging into company culture, identity, and strategy. She holds a Bachelor of Science in Health Education and Community-Based Public Health, a Master of Public Health, and a Doctorate of Health Sciences in Leadership and Organizational Behavior. She is also the author of White Supremacy is All Around, Notes from a Black Disabled Woman in a White World. Dr. Akilah, welcome to the show, and how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm so excited to be here to listen to one of my favorite voices. I'm just enjoying this atmospheric river that we're in right now.
Oh, that's what it is, the atmospheric river. I like that, you know. And by the way, I paid her lots of money to say I'm one of her favorite voices. So thank you very much. Check is in the mail, doctor.
That is free 99. I do enjoy it.
There you go. I started off by painting a picture.
Mm-hmm.
You were maybe a little bit ahead of the curve when you wrote your book. But did you anticipate us being at a moment where anti-blackness is not only out in the open, but increasingly through social media and other platforms, they're trying to normalize that. It's being politically rewarded. And you have folks who feel like, yeah, they're given right to say disparaging things and even to do disparaging things. Fortunately, a lot of people are getting their butts handed to them, but now that's resulted in folks getting legislation in point. You know, right. Like, I don't understand. I just called her the N-word. She had no right to knock me the hell out. And let's put a law in place that allows this sort of mistreatment without you being able to retaliate. And simultaneously, we have entire laws that have gone into place to protect the discomfort that people may feel. So if Dr. Akilah is teaching a class on white supremacy in Florida or in Texas or in Kentucky or Louisiana, and some student goes, I feel very uncomfortable with the word white supremacy, I know in Florida they can film you and go report you, and they can, you know, see if you violated some sort of state law and remove you from class. And that is something that I think they're testing out all around the country, with the president saying, we don't want our kids to feel uncomfortable. It's okay for you to feel uncomfortable, but when they say our kids, it doesn't include Black, Brown folks and others. So welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Earliest, easiest question, what's the state of the land for you right now?
You know, I go back and forth every day saying two things. We are effed. And they should have listened. And I just say that out loud. I say all these things all the time. And you just said something that was really important, that my book was ahead of the time, or I was ahead of the time, but I was just educated. So there's a difference, right, of what's happening. So case in point, Emmett Till was lynched in 1955.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act didn't happen until 2022.
That's right.
Right, on the federal level. So what do you think has happened since the Emancipation Proclamation, since Jim Crow, since, you know, 13th Amendment, all these things? It's just been morphed into another way. So we would say microaggressions, particularly here, you know, in California. I'm in open California for many reasons, but, you know, California is like the land, the birthplace of microaggressions. With all these tech companies and biotech companies we have microaggressions galore, you know? So all of these things have been happening. So where we are today, to me, is not a surprise. It's why I laid my staff off last year, because I knew I wouldn't be able to afford them this year. Because once we saw the state legislation saying we're outlawing DEI, and DEI isn't the only thing I do white people's stuff too. And I say that all the time. I handle white people's problems. My doctorate's in leadership and organizational behavior. I can solve your crisis. I can coach your highest level executive. I can get your board in shape. I can do all of those things. But I've been typecasted as a Black person, as a woman, as a disabled person, all things I'm proud of. And that's what people look at me for. And that puts me in the DEI bucket, right? And so I made all of these decisions because I knew we'd be at this point in time where we would have Donald Trump's regime. And, you know, here we are.
When you say you told us, right? What do you mean by that? And let me just maybe kind of frame it a little different. I saw three types of people over the past few years. One group of people was saying, Dr. Akilah, we're going to need a Trump. We need to separate. This will get people to wake up. This will be the wake-up call. This will be the Negro wake-up call. And that's not the word that Paul Mooney used. He used the other word, right?
Right,
that everybody needs. It's gonna get us to come together. We're all going to bond. We're all going to, you know, finally wake up to the delusion of America. The other side was, you know, in... like, are you really going to put Dr. Akilah and Davey D and all these people that look like them in their place? Because they need to be put in their place. And I don't care if I don't have a pot to piss in. As long as you put them in their place, I will be happy. So there's people that, I think to quote somebody, I can't remember who said it, they said, success for this administration is not whether or not they're making life better for you financially, or they're offering more opportunities. Success is that you're going to put the people that I hate in their place. So that's the reality that we're dealing with. So as long as you're suffering, I'm good. And then you got the other folks that are kind of like, as long as I make money, I'm good. I can be immune to this. So I have a lot of people like, I got this crypto money. You know, I'm on the Trump money train. You know, he's good for me. You know, get your money, brother, you know, and you're going to be good. So you kind of have those three realities. And I know you've spoken to all three. Some people are getting a wake-up call earlier than others, but what did you tell them? What were you experiencing? And did you anticipate? Well, you already said you anticipated this moment, but what were you telling them, and how was their reaction to it?
Yeah, I mean, these buckets that you're talking about are fair and true, and they're all rooted in white supremacy. And so that's why I wrote my book, White Supremacy is All Around, because mm-hmm. it is. It's every single place. It's even in our own personal thoughts and actions as Black people. We have also had to decolonize ourselves, right, to be in this position. So page 72 of my book, two things happen. I talk about Gaza and I name it a genocide, October 31st, 2023. And October 7th, 2023 is when, you know, the conflict happened. And so just an example of me being ahead of my time, but I say, see, white supremacy only works when people are oppressed. Colonialism only works when people are oppressed. Capitalism only works when people are oppressed. And that's what you're saying. Like, so having Donald Trump in power does all of those things. And that only happens if we are oppressed, right? So who's being oppressed? Even white people with no money, you know, right. The ones who thought their groceries were going to be more affordable, they're being oppressed. The white people, particularly the white women who benefited from DEI, they're now being oppressed further, right? The white people who use benefits the most, so we're talking about what some people may say, you know, as food stamps or whatever, they are benefiting the most. You know why? Because they're the most white people in America. They're also being oppressed. And so when you have that oppression, then you can paint the illusion of why you need me, Donald Trump, why do you need me, James David Vance, to run the country? In cahoots with who? Tim Cook, Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, and the list goes on.
Let's come back to this, right? You know, you talked about the white women that are kind of like, you know, went along to get along. But it seems, again, what carnal desires, I think, are something that we should never underestimate. People will go the extra yard. If you don't have no money, right? Mm-hmm. And somebody who you desire is in San Jose and you're in Oakland, and they're saying you could be satisfied, but you got to see me at 3 a.m. You have no car, no money. Your carnal desires will find a way to get down there. People will go the extra yard. I wove in carnal desire of seeing people oppress who you don't like. You know, and so it seems like people will tolerate a whole lot of craziness as long as you're suffering. That's all I want to see Dr. Keeler suffering. How do we deal with that? You know, do you address that in the book? Because that's a very hard thing to get around, because it's such a, you know, when you say it's everywhere, that's a spiritual thing. Like, I really get off on seeing you suffer. Like, I really do. And men could do the same thing. Like, I don't like these women. And we saw that, right? Like, I don't like the, and they're using the B word. I want to see you suffer. You know, I'm the new Diddy up in this place, you know? So, I mean,
it goes back into power and control. Power and control are pillars of white supremacy, right? Mm-hmm. And having that. So, for example, right now, prior to Mark Zuckerberg changing protections on social media platforms that he owns, I have a post that a reel on Instagram that has over 1 million views. And it's talking about the discrimination I received traveling while disabled. And people are upset about two things in this video. The only reason why it's viral is because this carnal desire that you're talking about. I'm walking in the video, and that's upsetting people when I'm asking for disability assistance, because people feel that to be disabled, you have to be in a wheelchair. And that's not true. Right. So there's that. The second thing that people are upset about is that I am Dr. Keela Kadai. So how can I be a doctor? How can I be a doctor and disabled? How can I be disabled and how can I be a doctor? Right. How is she black? How is she? Why is she talking about what's happening with this plane and this airline? That makes no sense. And so folks have been questioning me ever since, like, what my doctorate is. And I have a post that says it's doctor actually on a hoodie that another doctor gave me. And I explain how and why I'm a doctor. And if people took the time to comment on a post, they could take the time to just use Google as a search tool and they'll see all my degrees pop up because I have receipts because I am a Virgo. They don't want to do that. They rather lean into hate, right?
Right.
Right. So they're doing that, but also not even taking the time to see in the post that I say I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. That is my disability. And if you look it up, you'll know that my joints dislocate all the time. When you saw me last, you know, I had a brace on. I still have a brace on, right? And I can't. Stairs are really hard for me. And so this video, I couldn't go up the stairs.
Right.
I couldn't go up the stairs with my backpack. That's too much of a risk for me if I'm carrying something else. So that's why I use my protections as a disabled person to minimize my risk of falling and injury and further progressing my already progressive disability. But people don't have the time for that because they rather lean into hate. So carnal desire, another way to think about that is make America great again. Right. And the MAGA folks.
Right. Which is just a cold word. We're going to put that doctor in her place. Who the hell does she think she is?
Who does she think she is? Right. Now, the carnal desire part goes further because I haven't done anything illegal. I went to the schools that I was able to go to because of civil rights movements, because of Brown versus Board of Education. Right. I did what my parents told me to do. They both have doctoral level degrees, which is get a doctorate so I could have more opportunities because I could at least be a doctor in spaces where I knew I've experienced discrimination. Right.
Right.
But still, this body gets all of that attention because people feed off of that. Because if they can tell me something to make me feel less than and make and want to see me feel less than they win. So I do the complete opposite. Again, I'll do a petty post. I'll hold you accountable. I live a blocked and unbothered life. I will shut you down.
Yeah.
Because say it to my face, right? And that's the thing with social media. Say it to my face. So the folks who take the time to do that are a special level of really wanting to see and feel that. So you can think about like the Proud Boys, right? You can think about those types of groups. They're the ones that want to physically see someone suffering.
Dr. Keela, how do people who are on the receiving end of this counter? How do you, as somebody who's disabled, counter that? How does somebody black counter that? How does somebody who's a woman counter that? And I ask those three because sometimes you can catch hell internally. Right? So I might be looking at you like, how the hell is she a doctor? You know, black man needs to be a doctor. Too many of you all, you know, being doctors. And then, you know, the whole disabled thing is like, you know, that's a whole other sheet of ignorance that people have that I don't even know where you even began, you know, to dissect. But you're in the middle of all three. So let's start with one. You as a disabled person, how do you counter the white supremacy that's all around you?
So I think it's important to note that I don't have the privilege to distinguish which one is happening because of my intersectionality, right? So, and then I'll throw another one in there, which is I have pretty privilege. I am a stunner. I know it. So that also upsets people more. How can she be pretty and disabled? How can she be pretty and a doctor, right? Like how, and she has light skin privilege and she's black. Oh, she has light eyes, right? So there's so much, right, that goes into it. So typically it's a, you know, a combo platter, right, of things. But when it comes down to disability, I can be discriminated against by other folks who are disabled because they may feel I'm not disabled enough, right? So that we have internalized ableism that happens within the disabled community. I could get it from someone who is also black. Right? I can get it from a woman. I can get it from someone who has the same exact rare genetic condition as me and, you know, have a different experience, right? That's there.
Right.
But quite frankly, David D., what you're saying here And what you're asking is the very reason why I'm single, particularly with your comment around Black men, because I'm either intimidating because I'm a doctor, or I'm intimidating because I'm a successful woman, or I'm intimidating because I'm disabled and they don't ask questions, about what that means. And so this pattern, and that's why I wrote this book, this pattern shows up in so many places. If my identity is a problem to someone, I am not the problem. They are the problem. They have to work through their own stuff, right? To understand why they're questioning me internally or externally or both, right? That is a you problem. So I've given them all the stories in my book so they can process that. And when they're in that position, whether it is with me or someone who has 1, 2, 3, 7 parts of my intersectionality, they can handle it better instead of adding to the hate and the harm. So that's the other side that comes in when people are watching. They want this hate. They want this harm because of their power and their control. If we dismantle those feelings, we would be dismantling white supremacy and get to that position where we can have, you know, equity, where we can have opportunity.
Right. But this is not an either or, it's a both and. So you you mentioned earlier, Dr. Keeler, protecting your peace, right?
Mm-hmm.
So somebody listening, like, these people ain't reading your book, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do I protect my peace? How do I, and at the same time, maybe decolonize my mind. I want to protect my peace, but also I don't want to, you know, kick you or throw you under the bus in the process. So how do we start to do that?
I think the easiest way is by saying, what does that person's life have to do with yours? Why are you so bothered by their existence? Right? You know, if particularly if it's someone who's not in your daily life, why are you bothered by their existence? Why are you bothered about a trans person who is a transition from male to female going to the bathroom? Why does that bother you? Like, you know, it's not a you problem. So when you go into that decolonization and you're dismantling white supremacy, you're asking yourself that question, why am I bothered by someone else's existence? Right? So for example, my mom is older because she's my mother, but she is in her 70s, and her husband, not my father, but her husband in their 70s, and they both are academics. And so a few years ago we were having a conversation and they're just like, these pronouns are hard, I'm just not going to do them, that's just for your generation to deal with pronouns. And I asked one thing, are you still alive? And they both said yes. And so I said, well, then you can use pronouns, right? But it's this idea that I can't, like, I'm so bothered by their existence that I need to do all that I can to not support, not understand, not learn, not unlearn for someone who doesn't look or live like me. And so from that conversation, I gave them some advice. If you have a hard time with pronouns, you can always use the person's name. You can apologize. And now they do it and they're into it, right? And it's fine. But they had to, we had a conversation about it, but they had to start to process their own stuff, right? Another example is if I said that same thing to my mom was on the COINTELPRO list. So the counterintelligence program list. Mom's an activist. Wow. So I had no choice to not be this way. And then my father is Haitian, so I am down for the cause. I'm always down for the cause, right? So I had that within me. And I'm like, Mom, if I told you that when you were an activist, like, don't do anything for the Black students on Stanford, don't say anything, don't do anything, you would probably say that doesn't make any sense because I've learned what I need to know about me, and that person needs an opportunity. And that person who thinks we shouldn't be here on the campus, I'm gonna hold them accountable. It's the same thing, right? And so these things we have to do for the rest of our lives. We're checking our bias, we're checking our privilege, just as much as we're putting on our deodorant and brushing our teeth every day. But and then we're learning to show up differently.
But this is where you get the pushback. I don't wanna do all that. I'm working 9 to 5, in a dead-end job where there's no possibility of me ever being able to, you know, reach a financial status of comfort. So my comfort is I want to come home, I want to watch the game, I want to have a beer, And I don't want to be thinking about no damn pronouns. I don't want to be hearing no stuff about privilege. You know, the price of eggs is too high. Rent is too high. And this is the mentality. Mm-hmm. You are requiring me to work. I don't want to work. And it does take work for a lot of people to shed their biases. You know, white supremacy, I don't want to work. So mm-hmm. I'd rather have Trump in here so I can hate. I don't want to work. I don't want, you know, let's find somebody who's going to put these women in place. I don't want to work. Let's find somebody who's going to put these gay folks into place mm-hmm. because I don't want to be bothered with no pronouns after I work 9 to 5, right? So that's mm-hmm. the type of vitriol and thing that we get. So how do we do this dance? How do you address that in the book? You know, like, I don't want you holding me accountable after I worked all day. I don't want you doing that. I don't want you doing that. Leave me alone. Let me just be me. You know,
I don't dance and I don't fight. What I do is I tell the truth, right? And I speak the truth. So in that example, for that individual, it'd be a question about humanity. You want to feel like a human being, right? Mm-hmm. Because what you're not saying about the white person who's drinking their beer at the end of the day and just wants to watch the game is how they benefit every day from white supremacy. So what does that mean? Well, I would love to have the benefits of white supremacy, but I don't because I'm told I'm less than. So what are the benefits of white supremacy? Being pulled over and not dying, being murdered or maimed or arrested for any reason, maybe getting the speeding ticket or not getting anything at all. That white person who injures themselves on the job, they can go to the emergency room and their pain is believed instantly. Me as a Black disabled woman, my pain is never believed, even though it's in my charts, even though I have a doctor send a note ahead of time, even though I'm a doctor myself. I went to med school, but I have a non-clinical degree, so I'm a peer, right, of them. It is getting the promotion at that job. So now you're the shift manager, the manager or supervisor, and being able to have tenure without doing much. It's the bare minimum. And that's just because of their, you know, color of their skin, right? It's the simple fact that due to the history of enslavement in this country, regardless if they enslaved people or not, they have the benefits of that, which is what we do not have as Black people. So I bring it back down to humanity. Are you telling me I don't deserve to live in a neighborhood that has a grocery store? Are you telling me I don't deserve to be able to have a livable wage? Are you telling me I deserve to be discriminated against every day I go outside, right? And if that's the case, then fully lean in with your full chest of being a white supremacist. That's what I tell folks, do it. Be transphobic, be ableist, do it with your full chest. And if you happen to be caught and held accountable by the other white person who's done the work to move past being an ally and being an accomplice, that's a you problem. Right. But again, someone's lived experience, their humanity, we should focus on humanity. Everyone should be able to have the social determinants of health to thrive in this country.
Some would say, you know what, I'm never going to be able to change mm-hmm. those individuals. I can hold them accountable, or as Dr. King found out, I could try to find their moral center mm-hmm. and realize there is no center to be moral around, right?
Yeah.
So let me just build with my tribe. Let me just build mm-hmm. with you and we'll create our own thing, right? Is that the alternative? And this comes back to that first reaction to Trump. Boy, this is going to put us in a box and me and you now going to have to work together. My sister, mm-hmm. me and you going to build, and we're not going to try and change, you know, Miss Karen down the street because she ain't willing to change. She don't want to change. Her comfort is more important than being in community with me and you. So we'll build community and keep it moving. Mm-hmm. Is that possible in this world, or?
So today it was announced that a Black church owns the rights to the Proud Boys trademark.
I saw that.
Right?
That's funny. Yeah.
And that's accountability. So if they want to use their own name on merch, on branding, their website, or anything, they have to get approval from this Black church that they vandalized after a Trump rally in 2020 in Washington, D.C., right? Mm-hmm. That brings me joy, especially during Black History Month. That brings me so much joy.
But see, that joy that you get
mm-hmm.
is the joy that they get when
they get on the other
side. Vandalize
the
church. Yes.
Exactly. But we don't get those pockets of joy, right? If I say folding chair to you right now, you already know what I'm talking about. because that was a moment in time, right, for Black people. And we celebrate it annually as a result of that. Do you know why? Because we don't get accountability all the time. White people do. So when they're held accountable, it's the role reversal that is important to learning and unlearning to get to the place where we dismantle white supremacy.
But let's stop at that point.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of poor white folks who feel like there's no accountability. There's a lot of white folks, as far as they're concerned, I don't get all this stuff. Like I said, I don't have a pot to piss in. So we're all being manipulated by 1%, right?
Yeah, but you're forgetting their pot to piss in is whiteness. Okay, so that doesn't matter.
Explain, elaborate on that.
So you have the benefit of being white. The same reason why I have more privilege is because of my white ancestry I have. I have a lighter complexion. So I'm able to get into spaces and places someone with a beautiful, deeper complexion couldn't necessarily get into. I'm aware of that. I know, right? I have that benefit. So whiteness is the thing that allowed Donald Trump to get into office, because that is more important to maintain than your healthcare, than your eggs, right? The Department of Education is being dismantled right now. Those white families who have kids who have autism, for example, are losing their services. They voted for Donald Trump. They didn't want Obamacare because of marketing and branding. I don't want anything tied to that Black man. But they didn't realize Obamacare is the Affordable Care Act, ACA, right? They're losing their healthcare. They don't realize that because whiteness is so powerful that it's blinding to what is right in front of you, which is what you need to survive. Right,
but
these white women
spots,
losing their jobs right now, their DEI jobs.
They were the main beneficiaries of DEI.
They were the main beneficiary. Right. So we're at a point right now where people have to start to see what is happening with this power of whiteness. Right. If you dismantle white supremacy so everyone got the same thing, then we wouldn't have these Donald Trumps in offices. We would have people who have ideas and beliefs, like we did prior to Donald Trump running an office. You had Republicans who were more fiscally conservative, right? And you had Democrats that were more liberal. Going back to the history, that Republicans used to be more liberal and Democrats used to be more, right? And that's fine. You know, I think there should also be a stronger third party too, right? As we're going into who runs the government. But right now, since Donald Trump started his stuff, it has turned into the Republicans being MAGA, not all Republicans, just like not all white people, literally formulating a hate group, an extremist group,
right,
a far-right group, right?
But you talk about in your book, allyship, accomplices. So break that down, because I didn't do nothing wrong, Dr. Keeler. You know, in fact, I'm a Black man, but I like this man. He's going to make me some money on this crypto thing. Once I get that money, I'll be able to, you rolled your eyes, but you know, sister, I'm about to get paid, you know, and race, as somebody told me, racism's everywhere, you know, so, you know, we ain't going to change it. So let me get my pay, let me get my home, let me get my gun, and I'm good, right?
Yeah.
So when you have that sort of mentality, some people might call it individualism, I got mine, get yours, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a blind spot. We all have blind spots. So it's a blind spot that will allow me to put up with a certain amount of things that shouldn't be put up with, because it ain't affecting me right now. That's on you. I'm good. You know, I can go out at night. I got a home. I'm good. I don't know about you. It worked harder. But that is a mentality that many people have.
Yeah, well, they do. They do. And that's in part because we have a hard time trusting folks, right? When we see the Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk of the world parading around an unhealthy amount of money. Yeah, that's unrealistic things. Like, look about it. Think about the Tesla, right? There's people getting a sticker to put on their car to say, I bought this before Elon insert something negative here, right? But the reason why they bought the car is that they're into this idea of, like, maybe they wanted to save the planet, but they were into this thing that was like the hot new thing, particularly here in the Bay Area, right? And everyone wanted to be part of it. Everyone to be part of that thing. But now that they're seeing who he really is, and he's always been this person, you know, they want to separate themselves, right?
Right.
So that gets your question of allyship versus accompliceship. An ally is someone who chooses to do things for their comfort. They'll give some money to a bail fund, you know, for the murder of George Floyd. They'll vote for, you know, Barack Obama or Kamala Harris. They will say they have Black friends, right? They'll, they'll do that. They're learning how to use their power and privilege for good. So, you know, there's that. But an accomplice is someone who is exactly what it sounds like. People are like, accomplice, like a crime? Yeah. Be so committed that you know the consequences of putting yourself out there to lose the power and privilege that you have from whiteness because you believe that me as a Black disabled woman should have whatever, or the disabled person, or the API, Asian American Pacific Islander, whatever, whoever it is that you are being there for. Do that, to that commitment where you are going to rob the bank, get in the car, and maybe get the money and ride. Or there's some form of accountability that comes along the way, and accountability with accompliceship, particularly for a white person, means losing some of that proximity to power of being a white person.
That's a hard pill to swallow. Comfort versus...
Is it? Because Ben and Jerry's, they do a wonderful job. Right?
But Ben and Jerry's got a lot of money, so they can afford to be that. So how do we know that what they're doing is not still comforting? Because, you know, look,
it's not comforting because if you post white supremacy on your social media account for years and you don't take it down, knowing that someone who's sitting there drinking their beer, who now wants ice cream and they're never going to buy Ben and Jerry's again, that's the important type of accompliceship and role modeling, right? That needs to happen, right? If you're the CEO of JP Morgan, and you're saying, hey, I'm still committed to DEI, the CEO of Costco committed to DEI, those things are needed for that very person who's sitting on the couch too, you know?
Right. Well, I see that and I hear that. But there's an old saying, to whom much is given, much is expected. Mm-hmm. So I got $1,000 in my pocket right now. Giving you $5 is no big deal. But I did a nice thing. Mm-hmm. Giving you 10 ain't no big deal. Paying your rent where I got to give you 8. Now we're talking about something that's completely different, right? That's a sacrifice at this point, right? Now I'm in it skin deep. You know, the 5 or 10, I ain't going to miss. I did a nice thing, and that 5 or 10 may mean a whole lot to you. Ben and Jerry's putting white supremacy up. Sure, it might lose you some customers, but also gained you a whole lot because people are like, yo, Ben and Jerry's is that person.
Yeah.
Ben and Jerry's saying, let me make sure that half of y'all get to own this. That's a whole other story now. Now we got to have trust. Now we got to get into the trenches. Now I got to really get to know you.
Well, then we got to talk about Arizona tea.
Right. That's a whole different thing. And
it is.
You know, and so I think what many people may feel is that that's the level of commitment that we have to have in order to change things. I'm using a financial thing to maybe make a point, but it may also be, let me put it this way. I see a lot of folks, they'll get a grant, they'll get some money, they'll get some resources, and they want to organize in the same space that you're in. I want to do this hip-hop thing. I want to come to the city. I want to do a concert. I want to do all this sexy stuff here. But the work that you need to do might be in the burbs. It might be in the rural areas. I ain't going out there. Because there, then, you know, they don't care about, you know, your hip-hop conference that you want to do. That you got to really do some work, and you got to have hard conversations and all these other things where sacrifice is made. I ain't trying to do that. And I think there's a lot of folks, you know, from all different backgrounds that are very comfortable with what they're doing, but making that sacrifice, giving you that $800 out of my $1,000 so you can pay rent, you know. Let me give you $200.
So, I mean, I think it's important to note there's that financial sacrifice that's in there too. But most likely that person who's giving $800 to me, they have done the work and are continually doing the work, right? And so that's the way they are showing up. But let's talk about me for a second. I used to be able to to protest on the streets, but now I'm disabled. I can't do that. I could literally die. I can have a heart attack and die at any moment in time. So I can't be out there. So I've had to adjust my activism to my book, to my talks, to social media, and things that are safer for me, where I can show up and be an accomplice, right? And show up and be an activist, right? So yes, people have to find a way that it works for them. But all I'm asking for is forward momentum to get to the point that says that I no longer need to be oppressed, that you no longer need to be oppressed, that we all can have the same thing. See, the thing with why I say white supremacy is all around in my book is white people only think they should have the benefits of white supremacy. White people really don't even like to say white supremacy when it comes down to it, because it's, yeah, it's viewed as a negative word, but it's what they benefit from all the time. We can say racism all day, every day, right? People have more of an understanding of that because, again, there's power dynamics that are there. But I would ask that one white person, why do you deserve more than me? Why can't I have the same thing as you? And if you want to tell me, no, I don't deserve.
I worked hard.
If you want to tell me I don't deserve that, then you have to fully commit to staying in the benefits of white supremacy. Like I said earlier, do it with your full chest. Be a racist. Be transphobic. Be homophobic. Be that person. Fully commit to it. Because sitting and being passive, you're adding to the problem, right?
Do you think we're at that moment now? Because I see a lot of people that's like, yes, I'm just going to rebel. Yeah, that's where we're at right now.
Yes. Like, so I always knew, right? I always knew with the murder of George Floyd that that was performative. All of that was performative. It was the right thing to do. How do we know? Because all these companies are getting rid of the very investments they were doing, you know, after May 25th, 2020. Right?
Right.
But now, as I said earlier, white people are realizing they're going to be oppressed and affected by this current regime, this current federal administration, this government. And so now they are going to have to really choose full chest. This is what I want. And I want it to be this way. I'm going to tap into fake news. I'm going to tap into harm. I'm going to tap into the fact that, you know, not only is it impacting what's happening in America, but it's impacting what's happening globally with how America was supporting so many important things in so many countries, right, to no longer having access to things, right? So
if you're just tuning in, we've been talking with Dr. Akhila Cadet, talking about white supremacy and her book, White Supremacy is All Around Us. Dr. Akhila, if I grab your book.
Yeah.
You have a number of intriguing titles here, some of, I think, some of the things we talked about. But what chapter would you want people to really hone in on, really embrace, really uplift, and really be like, let me go 10 toes down on this?
So purposely, the first chapter is White Women Are Exhausting, and that's the chapter everyone should read or listen to. If you like my voice, not as much as David E's voice, but if you like my voice, I also did the audiobook as well. I think that is a key one. The Summer of Allyship and White Supremacy is All Around. Those are the chapters to look in for people to understand the systems and structures. I go right in with, in the very first chapter, of being in Bordeaux, France, and a white woman using the N-word.
Wait, so, explain that again. Somebody was in France using the N-word?
Yeah, so I'm part of an
international. Let me just let people know, a lot of the things you do, you tell stories to help illustrate some of these points. Yes, okay.
Yeah, definitely a storyteller. But I'm also, two days ago, I celebrated 10 years of my consulting firm. So I have been going around, and what I do is I help brands, businesses, celebrities, influencers, notable folks with their overall storytelling, their marketing, their branding, their crisis management, their strategy, and anything organizational development. And so the brands that I've worked with that some people may know, Blue Bottle Coffee, Keats Coffee, Google. I don't know if anyone's heard of Google. So I've worked with a lot of companies. Yeah.
So you're Olivia Pope for real.
I really am Olivia Pope. And there's a lot of things folks will never know that I stopped from happening. And so you are welcome for that. And, you know, there's also really cool things that I've been able to do, which is, you know, work with Serena Williams on a brand and, you know, like stuff like that, that it's that's definitely rewarding. And so This is not my first rodeo. I'm all about how do we have spaces and places that create cultures of belonging, you know, where people can, you know, thrive to be their best selves. Because if your C-suite, you know, has their stuff together, it has profound impacts on that entire culture. You know, if you can go to an event and feel valued in that space, it has profound impact on that event and, you know, that you know, individual. And so, you know, ultimately, I tell these stories for folks to know that, one, these things happen, and two, you can learn from it, right? So for the person who has intersectionality like us, they can feel seen, validated, and heard. And for the person, a white person in particular, who's been doing the work since the murder of George Floyd, they can move past allyship and learn how to read that same story and see ableism, racism, that gets them in the practice of being an accomplice. So this first chapter, White Women Are Exhausting, I talk about how I consult with in the wine industry, the beverage industry, fashion, tech, sports, I'm everywhere. And I'm in this international think tank, and we were in Bordeaux. So I was asked to speak about diversity and then also be on this round table about diversity. And this round table, I was the only diversity in the diversity discussion.
Right.
The only person of color, the only black person. And I say it in the book, token. The tablecloth was white, the room was white, it was just white, 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 and then me. And so this white woman who is from Atlanta, she has a PR firm for wine, marketing PR firm for wine, and she had this word cloud of wanting to work with this client who wanted to market chilled red wine to different groups. So she has this big word cloud, turns around and says, Dr. K, I want your thoughts on this word cloud. And right in the middle, in the biggest letters, it says, N-words beefing.
Wow.
And then she said it. And I said, please don't say that word. As a white woman, she said it again, you know. And so I talk about that story in the book.
She kept repeating it?
Yes, when I told her to not say it. And if it wasn't for a white man to tell her to stop, she wouldn't have stopped. And that white man who told her to stop is the New York Times wine critic.
Wow.
And in that story, I also talk about how he is an accomplice. So me and him, his name is Eric Asimov. We have a wonderful relationship. And anytime we are in the same room, I never ever, ever do the heavy lifting of DEI. He just says, Dr. Cadet would say, or in my experience, and he uses his power and privilege as a hetero, non-disabled white guy, you know, cisgendered white guy, to carry that weight for me. And if I want to put my input in, I put my input in, you know, but he literally does that for me ever since that day. And so that's why I think that's like the reason why it's chapter one. Is so important to have that story in there, because I don't think people realize, again, going back to whiteness, how women can choose being a woman, right, gender, or being a white person. But they always choose whiteness. That's why so many of them voted for Donald.
Right. So. Or in the case of this woman who wanted to use the N-word, she might have been a beneficiary of DEI, which is something that you...
She was not, because it was her own. It was her own.
But I'm just saying. But there's people like that, you know.
Yeah. No, there could be people like that too. I think a lot of people don't realize, particularly with these very, very big. We're talking about, you know, Fortune 500 companies, a lot of these tech companies. White women run DEI.
Yeah. That's
you know, right?
Yeah.
So exactly. Yeah. And then they're hiring me to solve the problems that they don't know how to solve, because they'll lean into, particularly when it comes to discomfort, they'll lean into their whiteness because they know the power of that. I don't have that privilege. I'm always oppressed. So I'm always leaning into my intersectionality to tell the story, right? And to hold someone, you know, accountable.
Dr. Akila, we could talk for hours. What do you want to leave our listeners with at this moment? Is there any marching orders that you would give them?
Yeah, I mean, the marching orders is buy my book. You don't have to read it. Download my book. You don't have to listen to it. But that is a way to start to leaning into being an ally, a way to use it as a tool, you know, to become an accomplice. We've had unprecedented times for a while, but we are having the wildest of times. This will be talked about in history your grandchildren's grandchildren will learn about what's happening right now. And so you have a choice, and you have to choose how you want to show up. So if you want to benefit from white supremacy, keep doing what you're doing. But if you are realizing what is happening with the power of white supremacy, now's the time to start to get the tools or use your voice to lean into being comfortable being uncomfortable. Because I can guarantee you, both David and I have been in spaces and places where we have been uncomfortable. I can guarantee you that we have had to learn how to acclimate to white dominant culture to have the success we have. We now are in positions because of the power and privilege we have where we can be more of ourselves, but it took a lot of work and know-how to get there. And so we're just asking for the same. So, and then last, I would just say, you know, with all that's going on, protect your joy, protect your peace as much as possible so that you can keep being amazing.
Dr. Akilah Cadet, we appreciate you coming on this afternoon. The name of the book, White Supremacy is All Around Us, Notes from a Black Disabled Woman in a White World. And there you are with your queendomness holding the cane.
Well, the cane I use to walk, but yes.
Right. But, you know, I mean, that's the way we do. We make something that is necessary look fashionable.
Oh, absolutely.
It just ain't any old cane. It's like, let me make sure this cane looked fly, you know. Maybe that's why they was mad. Why she got a fly cane?
I know, and that's why I did it on purpose.
Ralph for now. Peace.
Hey, I thought it was all over.
What's up, Dolce?
Hey, girl.
You know, it's been a little minute since you and I have had a chat.
Has it really?
Probably since, like, your last EP, All the Places You'll Go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
I've been getting some calls.
Oh.
People are a little bit worried about you.
Not worried.
And I know that I was kind of that outlet for you, so.
You were.
Why don't you just tell me what's been going on?
Okay. Remember old dude from 2019, nice clean, did me dirtier than laundry. Took a scroll through his IG just to get a DM from his wifey. I was so confused, what should Dolce do? She didn't know about me and I didn't know about Sue. I opened up the messages and had to hit the Zoom. Turns out the girl was really a dude. Think he slicked back till I slipped back. Got my lick back, turned it to a knick-knack. I moved on, dropped a couple of songs, and then I went and got signed. Now it's 2021.
Okay, I just feel like this is the perfect opportunity for us to just take a second and kind of unpack what's happened to you. You know, this guy cheated on you and...
Nah. Platinum record this, viral record that. I'm making so much money, I'm all over the net. I'm moving so fast, no time to process. And no, I'm not in the gang, but I'm always on set. This watch drip drop, label want the TikToks. Now I'm making TikTok music, what the... I need a cleanse, need a detox, but we ain't got time to stop. The charts need us. Fast forward me, 2023. I'm stacking lots of cheese and making money. My grass is really green and honestly, I can't even cap no more. This is a really dark time for me. I'm going through a lot.
By a lot, you mean drugs?
I wouldn't.
Drugs?
No, it's a...
No?
It's a natural plant.
No, I'm not judging.
I'm not an addict.
I'm just saying.
I don't think...
You wanna talk about it?
I like pills, I like drugs, I like getting money, I like strippers, I like to like day drinking and day parties in Hollywood. I like doing Hollywood, snorted Bollywood. What can I say? The works, it feels good, and my self-worth's at an all-time low. And just when it couldn't get worse, my ex crashed my place and destroyed all I owned. Whoopsie, made a oopsie, $100,000 oops made me loopy. I ain't a killer, but don't push me, don't wanna have to turn a dick of guts into soup bean.
Whoa. Okay, Dolce. We don't want to revert back into our old ways, so we're going to try a breathing exercise, okay?
All right,
when I breathe, okay. You breathe, all right? Let's go.
Hard knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop, EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan Kim. Stimulating ill conversation. Anything else should just imitation. Simulation. Step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio. Let's go. Big shout to Nita and Davey D. Yeah, right. Feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Yeah. Come on.
Talk Radio.
You and I rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast, Monday through Friday.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
This is Cy Khan here at KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, a liberated zone. Listen to community radio, support community radio. It belongs to us.
This is Bird Noir. I'm Private Eye Michael Stein. Recently, my local park put up nest boxes for tree swallows. So I head over to see these lovely new neighbors. But instead, I get an eyeful of a house sparrow shoving her way into the box. It really burns my biscuits to see these lowlifes steal nest cavities from other birds. But then, bang! The house sparrow bolts back out like she's seen something dreadful inside. I peek through the hole myself and see white belly feathers strewn about, as if a weasel made a meal out of a swallow. But when I step away, a pair of tree swallows fly right in, like this is home sweet home. What in the world is going on here? Only one way to find out. Stakeout time. Finally, I spot the swallows carrying white feathers and dropping them in the box. Then it hit me. These birds are staging their own murders. When intruders like house sparrows see the mess of feathers, they fear they're next. And they think twice about nabbing this haunted nest box. Turns out tree swallows have a twisted imagination. Just like this hard-boiled detective. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Private Eye. We'll be right back.
are listening to KBOO Portland.
Here goes nothing.
Tune in to KBOO for Drinking from Puddles, hosted by Brandon, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Don't say what you mean.